Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Today we're joined by Steve Christofiak. He's the president of the Mortgage Brokers Association for Responsible Lending. Steve, welcome to our show.
Bruce, it's good to speak with you again.
Let me ask you first, what led you to create this organization?
Well, I started it, founded it back in spring of 2006, and after speaking to other mortgage brokers and other people in the industry, there really was no voice no formal organization coming out and really giving kind of warnings or trying to educate lawmakers, regulators, and consumers about fraud that is very widely happening in the mortgage and real estate industry.
Okay. How would you describe the last 6 months for the lending industry as a whole?
Well, since it's middle of June right now, 6 months brings us to January or December. A lot of things happened in February and March, and a lot of loan programs have gone away. The news media has done a good job capturing some of the problems that consumers are having, being able to get homes what they could have qualified maybe last year in 2006 and they can't get now, which has really put a strain and a struggle for people selling or trying to purchase lower-end homes in the markets.
We noticed that the Board of Realtors, or excuse me, the Association of Realtors, California Association of Realtors, tells us that the median price is up in California, which sounds like good news, but what you just said really tells the truth, that it's the bottom probably third of our market that literally is without funding.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot from people, whether it's realtors, other mortgage brokers. They hear that figure and they claim it's great news, but when you then ask a follow-up question, what is the median, many people can't answer, and they don't really know how that number comes around, and that the median is the number in the middle. So if 100 homes get sold, the median is the price of that 50th home in the middle, where if home sales have really been sluggish or just have not been happening on the lower end, but they still are happening on the higher end, the median goes up. So home prices can actually go down when the median price goes up.
Yeah, the average price for a listing in Los Angeles probably is down 12%. Now, that's not considering just a particular home, but the average price in the listing, all the listings together, are 12% less than they were a year ago, but the median price is up. So it's exactly telling that same story. The prices are coming down, but the financing is really still there for the above median price, and the people that are trying to get in are having a hard time. Because is that where most of the damage has been done for the lenders, is those programs have started to disappear?
Well, the programs that have kind of disappeared are 100% financing has sure scaled back quite a bit. The riskiest of 100% financing being 100% financing with people with low credit scores and mm-hmm. those who cannot prove their income. If you can prove your income, you could still get 100% financing or 95% financing. If you have a good credit score and you could prove your income, you sure could still get 100% financing. So stereotypically, the people that would be buying 100% financing who can't prove their income, who have low credit scores, are going to be buying homes on the lower end of the spectrum in terms of price. So that's where we've kind of seen a skew. But it's a domino effect because those people who are selling those homes, they can't sell the homes for the price that they want, which means they can't then, which would be probably a starter home, they can't then move up the ladder and buy the next home. Those people then can't move up the ladder and buy their bigger homes. So it's also having a trickling effect as well.
Are you seeing a lot of people that would like to refinance out of their current loan only to find out they can't qualify for the new programs and perhaps they don't even have the value they once did in the property?
I would say the main reason why people can't refinance right now is for two reasons. One, the interest rates have gone up quite a bit in the last month. But really, two, is that because of home prices, the value of their homes have gone down. I've yet to really see a strong effort by the banks to go through the guidance of what came out last year in September, and having banks qualify people on the fully amortized rate. It's still happening very often that people are being qualified on the interest-only monthly payment. But as far as people being having a hard time to refinance, they had a three-year fix or a five-year fix at 4%,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they were used to. And those interest rates we haven't seen for quite a few years. And so it's a large shock when it comes to when their payments can increase 20, 30, 40% of what they were used to for many, many years.
That payment that they had also, in that guidance document that you referred to, that guidance document talked about, they warned of a stacked risk loan. Could you describe what they meant by stacked risk?
Well, I believe what they were talking about was risk layering.
Yes.
Which would be, and that's really why subprime came about, is because there are no two borrowers who are trying to buy a home that have the exact situation. There are always going to be blemishes on the credit, and banks realize that, so they come out and they do what's called risk layering. So if someone has possibly a low credit score but could be making $1 million a year or has a very large down payment, they're still going to be able to buy a home, and that's what subprime allows, which is a great thing. But it's when the risk, when you start layering risk after risk after risk, and it's people who have had a history of not being able to pay their bills on time, people who have possibly foreclosed on property or had bankruptcies in their past, people who don't have any money for a down payment, possibly who don't even have money for closing costs, possibly people who are actually in negative money because they actually owe money on cars and on credit cards. So you could have, in 2005 and in 2006, you could have had a negative net worth and have purchased a home, had bad credit, and you didn't even have to prove your income. That was risk after risk after risk just being layered upon top of each other, which has kind of gone away. You can probably now get have one of those variables or two of those variables and still purchase a home. But when having three, four, five of those variables and still purchasing a home, that's kind of gone away.
Well, let's say you were lucky enough, and I'll use that in quotes, to have funded that loan on your original purchase, and you have a payment adjustment coming up, and you qualified under the old guidelines, and you have no equity. So what you're telling me is that's a very high likelihood that that's going to be a foreclosure.
If they can't keep up with the new monthly payments after the loan reset, there's not many options. If you could be upside down in your loan, meaning you owe more on your property than your property is worth,
mm-hmm.
That's going to be very difficult to refinance. I have helped with a lawyer to be actually able to help a client get out of that circumstance, but I think that's far and few between that's going to actually be able to happen.
Now, when you say you helped them get out of the circumstance, we hear a lot on the news, at least I suppose somebody inside the business is trying to pay attention to that part of the news, saying that lenders are really going out of their way to help people that are in those situations. Do you find that to be true, or is that a very, very small percentage?
I found this one case to be a very extreme and unusual situation. It's pretty much the equivalent of a short sale, but for refinancing.
Wow.
So the bank actually gave up a portion of it, of their loan. There was a settlement. They said that there was a certain balance that was required. I think they owed something a little bit above $600,000. They were able to have it negotiated down to $525,000. They didn't have to make monthly payments for about 2 or 3 months. Their credit score during that 2 or 3 month period did not get hurt. And by a certain cutoff date, they had to get a new loan with a new lender. And so the payoff remained that same number of $525,000.
Were these people, I'm just curious, were they behind at the time or were they current?
They were actually current.
Okay.
Which is actually another thing that I've read that is the complete opposite, which where banks will not deal with you until you are behind.
That's right. That's why I asked the question. It's completely unusual.
Exactly. And I was very taken aback. I mean, the best way for what I said was to explain it was it felt like a short sale, but it was refinancing.
It was a short sale.
It was a short refinance.
Yeah, only they got to retain ownership. And
exactly. So that's kind of will be new for the glossary.
Absolutely. An option arm, is that a loan that kind of has some of those risk characteristics, but for a higher FICO score client?
An option arm has many, many problems, many risks.
How prevalent were they during the, you know, the boom years?
During the boom years in 2003, which I would classify as a boom year, they were not very popular whatsoever. Not until really 2005, 2006, where that was really one of the only advertisements. If you were to go onto the internet and go onto a search engine, or open up your email with some spam, that was really the main type of loan product being advertised, because it was just being advertised the low monthly payment.
Okay.
And many people were uninformed of really how complex of a loan they were. They were just focused on the low monthly payment. But what these people are going to have to deal with, and in 2005, specifically here in California, I think it was somewhere around 20% of all loans done in 2005 were option ARMs. In the Bay Area, it was 29%. And in California, it in 2006, I believe it was something close to 30% in California and close to 40% in the Bay Area. What many people don't realize is that when you get that loan, your credit score will actually go down. And the reason is because on your credit score, your ratios are getting higher and higher. And what that means is that you took out a loan for $500,000. That shows up on your credit report. Well, generally, the balance goes down, and that improves your credit score because you owe less, and you're less maxed out on that loan. Well, with an option ARM, your balance keeps going up and up and up, and it actually goes beyond that $500,000. So it actually goes beyond the maxed out point.
It's like having an over-encumbered credit card?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
According to your credit score.
Okay.
So imagine if your home price just stays the same. There's a couple bad things that are happening to you right now since 2005 if you have one of these negatively amortized loans. One, you owe more on your property, but the property has either gone down in value or stayed about the same. Your credit score has gone down because you keep owing more and more and more on your loan. And your interest rates have definitely been climbing because most likely most option ARMs, the interest rate actually changes every month of what you owe. And interest rates have been climbing for the last 2 years.
What happens when that ratio gets too high? So the loan originally was, say, $500,000. What was the most the lender was willing to allow that to go up before they said, okay, now we have to start reducing principal?
Right. The most aggressive bank I've seen, which is the bank that allows you to go negative the most, would be about 125%. That is the most aggressive I've seen. I would say your typical negatively amortized loan allowed you to go negative 10 or 15%.
Is that taking into consideration the price drop or not?
It does not. It is the original loan balance amount. There's no appraiser that is coming out every couple months to see how much your home is worth.
Is that possible that they could decide we better check and see what it is in fact worth, or no, that won't happen?
My understanding is not.
Okay.
I don't think that an appraiser will not come out to your house unless you're dealing with PMI situations,
okay,
which a negatively amortized loan would not.
On an equity line, in the equity line document, it is in fact in there that the lender has the option to come out, reappraise it, and reassess the size of the credit line. So I was just wondering if that was true on the option arm.
And I'm wondering if on an equity line, if that would be true on a first lien equity line as compared to just a second lien equity line.
I have that, and it is in the document.
For a first lien as well?
Yep.
That's interesting to hear.
Yeah. It was just it's just an equity document, whether it was in first or, you know, because I have a, let's say I own a home free and clear and I get an equity line for doing investments. Yeah, it's in first position, but it still has all the nasty, we can call it, we can do a lot of things that most people don't realize. And that's Bank of America, so that's a pretty standard loan.
Well, Bank of America appraisers might be having a lot of work in the next couple of years.
That's true. That is very true. Let's take us through a typical scenario. Let's say I'm a homeowner. I call you up for, I want to refi my home. As a mortgage broker, you have a lot of different lenders with different products. In the past, has it been more profitable for you as a mortgage broker to put me into a loan that would be more beneficial to the broker than to the owner?
For me personally, my commission is the same no matter what loan I do. But I would say that's not typical for many of the borrowers, or I'm sorry, for mortgage brokers in California. In California, you can make up to 6% commission on each loan you do. You really get to make up whatever commission structure you want, whether you want to make a half a point, 1 point, 3 points, or 5 points. It could differ from however you were feeling one day to the next.
Well, now, if I saw a 6% commission rate on my refi, I'd probably have a heart attack. So how is that done in a more palatable manner? Are there ways that interest rates can be boosted so the lender has a return that they're happy with, and yet the points appear to be low, and the broker gets compensated in another way?
Yeah, I think it's important for your listeners to know that every interest rate comes with a commission.
Okay.
There's many different words for that, but pretty much it comes down to a commission. And one interest rate can give me a commission of 1 point. One interest rate can give me a commission of $0. Another interest rate can give me a commission of 3.5 points. And then there's some interest rates where it will actually be negative commission, meaning I actually have to pay the bank enough money so that we could get that interest rate. And then in that type of a situation, I would ask the borrower to pay the bank that discount, we call it, and then that borrower would then have to pay me my commission on top of that.
That's called buying down the rate or something like that?
Exactly.
Okay.
So there's many different ways to structure a loan when it comes to paying the loan officer. Unfortunately, many times, many people do not know that different interest rates come with different commissions. So when a mortgage broker or a loan officer tells you that today's rate is, let's say, 6.5%, well, is that 6.5% giving out a commission of 1 point, 2 points, 3 points? It varies from however greedy or honest the loan officer is that you're speaking to over the phone or in that interview.
Okay. Let's say the loan is funded, and whoever the lender is, I'll just pick one just for the sake of argument. Is Countrywide someone that would deal with a loan broker, allow them to fund loans for Countrywide, and now Countrywide has a loan in their portfolio?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Does Countrywide keep those in their portfolio, or is there another mechanism where they now turn the loan over and sell it to somewhere else?
Many banks will go ahead and sell their loans, and you'd be wondering, who's going to buy a loan? Generally, when you're looking at such large lending institutions as a Countrywide, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, they're doing hundreds of millions of dollars of loans every day. And they're going to take these large bundles of loans, package them together, and sell them on Wall Street. And it could turn out that your loan that you funded with Countrywide can be owned by a foreign government, a foreign investor, a life insurance company, a pension, or our own federal government, or another bank. Hedge funds are also big buyers of these. But you might not know, because you're going to continue making out your check to that Countrywide, because they're going to hold what's called the servicing rights.
Okay.
They're dealing with the customer service.
Let's say this loan goes bad.
Okay.
So now we're in a position where we, in fact, have a $600,000 loan on what is now a $500,000 house. Who takes the hit for that? Is Countrywide off the hook? The mortgage broker off the hook? At what point does somebody have to, somewhere down the line, go, uh-oh, I'm on the hook?
Well, there's a couple different answers for that question. Generally, if Countrywide sold your loan to someone on Wall Street, that person that company who bought it on Wall Street would say, all right, we're going to buy those loans from you, but if any of them go bad in the first 2, 3 months, or 6 months, Countrywide, you have to buy it back from us.
Okay.
At a loss.
All right.
So if it happens in that situation where someone defaults on the loan right away, it's most likely the lender that's going to take that hit. But if it goes bad 2 years, 3 years down the line, and there was no fraud found, that loan could have been bought and sold a half a dozen or a dozen times.
Okay.
So it could be a bond fund, it could be a hedge fund, it could be a life insurance company that takes that hit.
When they start taking hits, and they probably will be taking a lot of them, does that make the or increase the likelihood that interest rates will start going up to compensate for that risk?
Well, what we've seen is that in 2003, 2004, 2005, there was a large appetite for those companies on Wall Street wanting to buy mortgages. They saw them as great investments because they weren't defaulting. When your home is going up 10, 15% every year for 1, 2, or 3 years in a row, the likelihood of you defaulting is very low. So there was a large appetite, meaning that the interest rates could keep going lower and lower because it was virtually a risk-free, at the time, investment. Now that we're seeing the risk go higher, defaults going higher, these companies on Wall Street are going to want to make more money because there's more risk involved now. When home prices are flat or in areas are going down, there's a larger likelihood that that homes will default. So the interest rates will go higher. On top of that, the 10-year bond has really gone up a lot, which is a financial indicator for mortgage rates, which
Correct.
Is maybe a little bit more than this show.
No, that's okay. No,
a bit off topic.
No, it's about 5.2%, and I think most of the people that are familiar with us know that that's an indicator that interest rates on mortgages were affected.
Yeah, and they absolutely interest rates in the last 1-2 months have really gone up a lot higher. So if anybody's listening to this today and they got qualified by a loan officer or a mortgage broker to buy a home, whether it was an investment property or a primary residence or a vacation home back in March or April, I would invite them to call back that loan officer and rework the numbers with current interest rates, because most likely their purchasing power has gone lower.
What's interesting about what you just said is a lot of builders are going to have that problem. They probably thought they had sold a home, and when they get done building it, the financing may not be there.
The financing might not be there, and they were possibly, maybe that builder or the buyer who was going to buy that brand new home was going to sell their previous home, and they're going to have a struggle, a hard time also selling their previous home. In fact, I've heard of one builder in Southern California who is actually going to go ahead and take your current home off your hands if you buy a home from them,
mm-hmm.
and they'll sell it for you.
I guess that I'm not sure that improves their situation, but at least it moves their inventory.
Any way to move product, exactly.
Okay. We've only got about a minute and a half left. You mentioned the word fraud. Stated income, stated assets certainly invited that. And I suppose the appraisal world was asked to cooperate. So all of that is in the past. In the future, do you see legislation occurring that will put a stop to some of the nonsense that was allowed to go on?
Yeah, there's been a lot of harsh talk in the United States Congress and the U.S. Senate in the last 3 months. And because of that, I think states have actually taken a wait-and-see approach of what is Congress going to do? Mm-hmm. What is the Senate going to do? Or what is Congress has really, really been hitting hard the Federal Reserve, saying there's this law, we gave you powers back in 1994 that you could correct this. You could go over all state entities and correct these problems. You haven't done that in the last 13 years since you've had that power. Use that power. I think Barney Frank was saying either use it or we're going to take that power away from you and we're going to do it ourselves.
You think the industry itself is better to regulate on its own?
Well, the industry has been trying to regulate themselves for the last 3 years, and a lot of fraud has gone by.
Yes, it has.
I think if we just get rid of the fraud, I think bad loan products will go away on its own.
One of the problems is that when you get rid of the fraud, we may in fact uncover that the only reason our prices went up as high as they did was because of fraud.
I would tend to be one of those people that would think in that boat. I think that is a true statement. I don't think it's the only reason why home prices have gone up, but it sure does explain why income levels in the last 5 years have stayed flat and home prices have doubled in many areas.
Right.
How can that be? Banks were willing to loan out the money, and many times it's because of the fraudulent loans.
Steve, thanks for joining us. I really enjoyed our interview, and we'll talk again another day.
Bruce, it was good speaking with you as well.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.